You are listening to The Raptor Report, the official podcast of Raptor Maps, the leading provider of life cycle management software for the solar industry. This is Stephen Gloss, the lead Raptor reporter, joined by my co-host, Don Nista. We are here to highlight the latest trends and developments within the solar industry. Joining us today is Carl Lennox. Carl is the Senior Director of Products for Sunrun, a clean energy technology company whose mission is to put control, simplicity, and possibility in the hands of every person to connect with the cleanest energy on Earth. Thanks for taking part in this feature Raptor Report, Carl. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank you so much. Great to be on the pod today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I already know that you're sort of well acquainted with Don, my co-host. So if you wouldn't mind filling in some gaps for myself and perhaps our audience, how did you find your way to Sunrun, the solar industry, and ultimately Don?
Sure. So I've actually been in the solar industry for quite a long time. I started in about 2001. I came in out of high school. I wasn't as many people. I wasn't looking to go into solar. I was actually interested in biomedical engineering, in fact. But I ended up taking a gap year on a sailboat, going off to some very remote locations, and sort of realized that energy was kind of this fundamental. There's a fundamental lack of energy access that a lot of people had in the world, yet kind of a massive abundance of resources. And so that got me interested in solar specifically and in kind of energy generally. So that's where my path started. And I was lucky enough to get, kind of a seat on the train very early at a company called PowerLight in Berkeley, who is one of the pioneers of CNI. And utility scale solar. From there, kind of had a progressing series of roles, starting in, product development. I'm a mechanical engineer by training. So did a lot of kind of innovative product development. And then PowerLight was acquired by SunPower, who was then invested in by a company called Total, which is a large European oil and gas major. And so my career kind of, progressed at all these scales, right? From a 35 person startup or so, through growing to being, one of the leading solar providers in the U.S., and then ultimately into a multinational corporation, where I landed and was kind of helping them do more kind of innovation management, working with startups, working with academics, trying to help them figure out their strategy for the energy transition. About a year and a half ago, I decided to kind of get back into the solar space. And I was looking at what Sunrun was doing, particularly around electrification, virtual power plants, and really kind of pushing, pushing the industry forward as a leader, and decided, that's really where I want to be. I really want to, be part of that and helping to drive that forward. So had the opportunity to join Sunrun, and that's where I've been for the past year and a half or so.
Yeah, really appreciate that. And then at what point did you and Don cross paths?
Fairly recently. We have a common, I guess a recent employee of Raptor is a friend of a person on my team. And so we had an introduction that way.
Yeah, Carl, it's been kind of great getting to know you of recent and learning about your journey and kind of what you're involved in now, which I can't speak for your past, but I think you're involved in some pretty cool things now. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your area of focus with Sunrun, and then maybe we can unravel some of the cooler projects you're involved in.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. So, my team at Sunrun is responsible for essentially all of our hardware and IoT kind of core products. So what I would term our atoms and electrons related. We work very closely with our software tech team, as well as our financial products team, to kind of bring those products to life and make them affordable for customers. So, have the whole life cycle experience. So as part of that, we handle everything from introducing new modules and inverters all the way through our cutting edge projects around around energy storage, EV charging, our partnership with Ford, which I can talk in a bit more detail about. You know, working with our grid services team around virtual power plants, which I think we'll also touch on. So really, you know, all of the, both the kind of the core business that we're kind of working on a daily basis, as well as our future roadmap and driving that forward to really create a holistic, you know, home of the future really for our customers is a lot of what our team focuses on.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I kind of I'm curious the technologies, kind of the core fundamental technologies of, you know, solar power and battery backup systems for residential have been around for quite some time. But I think I think you're more of an expert on this than I, but a lot of the innovation has been around making it smarter, making it more connected, you know, streamlining smaller packages, cleaner installations. Am I off base there? Is there more to the picture than that? And kind of what is the latest for kind of that core solar plus storage smart home tech?
Yeah. So I would say, you know, there's always room for, I would say, at this point, incremental innovation in, I would say, the core solar product. So, you know, modules, inverters, we see that, you know, moving forward, and there's always an opportunity to make sure that we're, you know, bringing the right portfolio of offerings to our customers. So that's definitely a focus, but it isn't, you know, an area where we see big leaps in functionality. On the storage side, that's obviously, you know, moving a little bit faster, although I would agree it's fairly stable. I do think what we'll be seeing, you know, over the next few years is a substantial increase in attach of storage to solar for a number of reasons. There are policy reasons for that. There are economic reasons for that. And there's just the fact that as we install more of these products and as more of these, you know, more of this technology goes into our vehicles and other things, there's a huge scale up, right? And with that scale up comes cost down. And with cost down, it becomes much more accessible. And so I do think that's a trend we'll definitely be seeing. And that adds a whole sort of dimension to the system that makes it kind of a more active contributor to both our customers' capabilities we deliver to our customers and to the grid. Whereas, you know, a solar only system is fairly passive. It kind of sits there and does what it does. A storage enabled system is very dynamic. And then when we layer in, you know, energy-related smart home devices, when you layer in EV charging, either managed EV charging, where you're controlling the rate of charging or bidirectional, eventually, we're actually able to dispatch the vehicle as if it were a battery. Those are, you know, again, even more sort of dimensions of both sort of complexity and opportunity that are opened up for us.
Yeah, in terms of like industry trends, I feel like maybe 10, 15 years ago, solar on your roof was a bit of a, you know, an elite tech, or kind of you were the cool guy on the block if you had it on your house. And now, you know, 10, 15 years later, that's become more standardized. And I feel like you could speak to this, but I feel like battery may be going through the same type of trend where it was only made the most sense when you either had the money to do it, or you didn't want to buy a generator for your home, so you wanted a backup system, or you were just purely off grid and required the backup system. But are you seeing, you know, a higher rate of solar plus storage or battery coupled systems? I'm assuming yes, but like, how fast is that accelerating, and how normal is that becoming?
Yeah, well, you know, like all things in solar, you know, it always comes full circle, right? So I like to say there's nothing new under the sun, but there's, you know, there's new kind of variations on a theme, right? So if you were to go back and look at, you know, what the solar industry was historically, you know, 20, 30 years ago, before there were grid tied systems, actually almost all systems were off grid. And so you'd have these people up in the woods, you know, with their big bank of lead acid batteries, and for various reasons, they didn't want to connect to the utility. There's a very rich history there, especially in California. You know, moving forward, you know, obviously as lithium ion battery technology has become sort of ubiquitous, that's really changed the game, right, in terms of being able to adopt storage. So I would say, yeah, on the solar side, right, like Sunrun in particular really innovated around being able to finance solar and help people make it, you know, really affordable. So that that kind of dynamic of it being something for, you know, cutting, you know, very early adopters, relatively wealthy people, you know, that's that kind of is no longer the case, right? And that's largely due to being able to finance these systems in such a way that you can actually save money from day one without any money down. And that's very affordable for many people. In fact, you know, for that's a kind of a key value of Sunrun. We actually make solar accessible, right, to the majority of folks. And that's certainly going to happen in storage as well. I think what we're seeing in California, for example, under this net billing tariff that's going to be coming into play later this year, actually, virtually all systems, in our view, will have storage attached. The economics are such that that just becomes it becomes sort of inevitable. And that's going to that I think that there's going to be some ripple effects from that. We're going to see with, you know, the biggest market in the country becomes effectively 100% storage attached. That's going to unlock opportunities nationally and perhaps internationally. You already see this outside of the U.S., right? If you look at Europe, particularly Germany, Australia, and even states like Hawaii, effectively they're already in this situation because of the way that compensation is structured in those countries. You just don't it's much more valuable to self-consume that electricity and use it you know, in your own home at the time it's either generated or when it's stored and dispatched than it is to sell it to the utility and get credits essentially and then use those credits later like we do in net metering in the US. So you're right. Historically, the motivation has been primarily backup and in some markets, some additional value provided by time of use arbitrage. So being able to charge the battery when, you know, electricity is inexpensive and discharge it when electricity is expensive. But as we move into things like net billing tariff and other kind of more self-consumption oriented tariff structures, the value of having a battery increases significantly.
Yeah, thanks for all those insights, Carl. One of the things that I'm curious about, and Don touched this a little bit, I'm not sure how close you keep your ear to the public perception of solar. I can probably assume that it's changed pretty dramatically over the course of the past decade. What would you say is perhaps the overall feedback or the general response you get from potential customers today who might be on the fence about the feasibility of solar energy and whether or not it's worth it?
Yeah, I would say, look, I mean, we still have a long way to go, right? I think our market penetration of residential solar, I have to look up a number, but I think we're on the, you know, in the order of a few percent, right, still today. So there's plenty of folks who still need the solution. And in general, I'd say people are still very excited to have the opportunity to tap into it. So I haven't seen, you know, anything change there. What I have seen change is, again, kind of the affordability and accessibility has certainly expanded over the years. And so we're sort of continuing to kind of open up the market and make this make solar and storage and other technologies available to more and more consumers and homeowners. I think what the other thing we're seeing, right, to some extent is over the years, kind of a generational turnover in home ownership, right? So now we're starting to see younger folks, millennials, starting to see Gen Z, you know, kind of come into home ownership, and they have a very different, in some cases, attitude towards climate, right? Many folks are very climate motivated, for example, and you know, understand the economic story as well. So in general, I think, you know, the trend that we've seen for a long time has continued, right? I mean, solar is very popular across all sorts of different demographics, all sorts of different political persuasions. We actually haven't seen that necessarily change that much, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, that really is. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so Carl, you know, kind of building on what you've said about the expansion or the growth in the residential solar plus storage market, one of the innovations I know I'm really excited about is, you know, the aha moment that the EV market has had, where you know, everybody's driving around in a vehicle now, or not everybody, I guess. When you're driving around in an EV, you've got a you've essentially got a mobile home battery backup system. And Ford has taken notice, and Ford has reached out to you at Sunrun. So I'm excited to hear more about the initiative with Ford and how we're taking that. I think it's starting with the F-150, but correct me if I'm wrong. You know, connecting that to a bidirectional inverter, and all of a sudden you have a cool car and the ability to back up your home. So I'd love to learn more about that.
Yeah, this is something we're very excited about. So we're Ford's you know, preferred partner for installation of the EV charger for the F-150 Lightning, as well as the what we call the home integration system, which is the means by which you connect the truck itself, you know, to the home in order to provide backup in an outage. You know, that we're obviously in early days of that product, or that of those trucks being delivered, and it's ramping up. It's great. And so we're starting to see these systems, you know, get installed and commissioned and used in people's homes, right? I mean, we're seeing people go through outage events, and they have their truck, you know, in their driveway or in the garage, and they're powering up their whole house, and, you know, maybe losing, you know, 10, 15 miles, right? But they power their house through a significant utility outage. And that's a great experience to have. So it's a really powerful thing, and a great benefit for people who own EVs. You know, it's interesting, right? Because Ford is very much on the cutting edge of this technology. They've really taken a forward lean into this, and so we're super excited to work with them. There's, I think, work to do to make that kind of capability available, right, for across all vehicles, in all homes, because there's a set of standards and things that are still being worked through to make it kind of a universally available solution, so that no matter what vehicle and system you have, you're able to kind of do this. So we're excited to see that progress as well. But you know, today Ford has a solution, and really nobody else does. So it's fantastic being, you know, part of that with them.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited, and I appreciate kind of the overall background about exactly what's going on. But I kind of want to open it up for you to nerd out a little bit on the you know, technology and integration side, maybe smart home side, or monitoring or hardware integration to actually make this happen. You know, what's going on in the background at Sunrun in your world to simplify this integration and make it easy for everybody to have this? Yeah, what's on the software and hardware side?
Are you speaking about the home integration system?
Yeah, well, Ford specifically, and, you know, the bidirectional inverters, and kind of what actually needs to happen for me to pull my F-150 Lightning into my garage, plug it in, and then all of a sudden I'm backed up.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, at a high level, I think one of the great things about the way this has been set up is that we're not, you know, fully reinventing the wheel here. So I think it's important, you know, when we talk about delivering these kind of capabilities to customers, that we're doing it on a platform that's, you know, robust and proven and trusted. And that's what we've done here. So we're using a very similar kind of set of equipment as what you would find in a standard battery backup type system. So it's something that the utilities are familiar with, for example, so that we can, you know, don't have any, because it looks different from the outside, right? It's exotic, but it actually isn't. It's really there's a battery, it happens to be inside of a vehicle. And it connects to a set of equipment that's very similar to what you would have in a traditional backup battery system. So specifically, right, the vehicle's connected to a bidirectional inverter. The inverter is behind a microgrid interconnect device, so a standard kind of transfer switch-like device that we use in these sorts of systems. And you know, when the grid goes down, that automatically opens. And the truck starts, you know, powers up the inverter and starts powering the home. So it's very familiar, you know, from a permitting perspective, from a utility interconnection perspective, to what folks are used to seeing. And that helps us out quite a bit in making sure that we don't have any challenges kind of rolling this out and you know, ensuring that it performs as we expect.
Yeah. So Carl, what is like the endurance on that? Like, so if your power goes out, if you've got perhaps a full charge on your truck, how long would you suspect that would actually last?
Great. So yeah, in terms of the amount of time that the Ford Lightning and home integration system can power a customer's home, we generally say that it's up to 3 days, and then and you can extend that up to 10 days with solar and the customer, you know, taking control and you know, reducing certain end uses if they choose to do that. So that's kind of to get a sense of how long, generally speaking, we guide customers to the duration that the truck can provide.
And is there versatility to perhaps like in emergency events where emergency response, perhaps like hurricanes or floods, for that power to be mobilized outside of like individual homes as well?
Yeah, actually on the truck, I mean, the F-150 Lightning is an amazing, amazing vehicle. If you ever have a chance to drive one, you know, take it. It's quite cool. But yeah, it actually has a bunch of outlets, you know, on board in the bed, in the frunk, which is the, you know, the area in front where the engine and the traditional internal combustion F-150 is. It's actually just a big empty space that, you know, you can put your cooler in and, you know, your groceries and stuff. And there's a bunch of outlets in there. There's a bunch of outlets in the bed, including actually a 220 volt outlet in the bed if you have like a, you know, a big power saw or whatever. So it's really quite thoughtful. Now, of course, all of that power that's on board the truck, you know, that's, you can't, you have to use that only kind of in a quote unquote off-grid mode, right? So you can power things off of it, but you can't directly hook that into the house because it's not intended to be kind of interface with your home's electrical system. So that's how you would provide that power kind of outside of your home.
Carl, you mentioned something that I hadn't really considered prior to this conversation, which is you know, call it 10 or so power walls on wheels. If you're experiencing an outage and you're, you know, 4 or 5 days in and you're getting to the end of the battery or the charge, you could just drive the damn thing to another section of the grid that has power still. And it's like, you could just power up your power walls and then bring them right back, essentially. So I hadn't really considered that. I don't know. That's super cool. I don't know if there's a question buried in there, but
yeah. Well, in addition to that, actually, to your point, the home integration system, you can actually put stationary batteries on it as well. So you know, in the case that you want to, you know, drive your truck somewhere during an outage, you can actually keep your home powered with those stationary batteries until your truck comes back, which is a great feature as well. It also allows us to, we can connect solar directly into the home integration system. So it's actually a really nice kind of solution for our customers to be able to kind of get the whole package.
Yeah. The one last integration question I have is, has there been any consideration made for perhaps the truck to have a vehicle to have the potential to gain like actual solar energy charge while it's outside driving?
That's a great question. I'm not quite sure what you mean. You mean in terms of like putting a PV on the vehicle?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are companies who have done that, right? Or who have, I would say, kind of proof of concept vehicles that do that. You know, the interesting thing is, reality is that you know, the amount of PV modules that you can kind of fit on the roof of a typical vehicle are not really capable of adding that much range. There just isn't that much physical surface.
Sure. Yeah.
I do think, you know, I am curious. I'm sure somebody's working on this, but I'm curious if someone's going to come up with like a, you know, a bed cover with, you know, sort of a slide, you know, slide outs. You can take camping, you know, and like, yeah, set up like, you know, these a bunch of modules that kind of that plug in. But I'm speculating. I don't know if that exists. I'm hoping it does.
Yeah. No worries.
I have one last question about this before we move on, and feel free to not answer if it's not your area of expertise. But you have to ask the question, what's going to happen to Not just, I guess, not just the Powerwall. That's the name everybody knows, but the home battery solution market, as this becomes normalized, as people start to buy more and more EVs, this integration becomes more accepted and cheaper. And I just have to imagine that that's going to really hurt the traditional home storage market. But I'd be curious to hear your take.
Yeah, I actually don't believe that will be the case. I think they're complementary solutions, and they have different use cases in many respects. The thing you have to keep in mind is that the primary reason to have a vehicle is not to power your home; it's to drive somewhere. And so you can imagine that, you know, there's a lot of situations where you may want backup power for your home, but you're not home. And that could be on a temporary basis, so that could be on an extended basis. Imagine you're off on vacation, you're off skiing in Tahoe or something, right? And there's an outage at your home. Well, you still don't want the food in your fridge to spoil. You still don't want, right? You still want your security system to be powered. While the duration that you desire may be less, or the amount of capability that you desire may be less in that situation than you would otherwise, there's still for sure a role for backup power, in addition to having the capability to do that from the vehicle. The other thing is that, again, in a market like California, coming up this year under the net billing tariff, you really have to be essentially processing the power that your PV is producing through a battery all the time. So unless you're going to just have your EV hooked up to your house all the time, that doesn't really solve that problem. It doesn't really provide the value, right, to the customer that a battery does when you're under that kind of a tariff. So it's really sort of different use cases in some respects.
No, I think that's a perfect answer. And it makes total sense. You may be able to downsize the size of your home backup. For those scenarios where you don't have access to the vehicle, that makes complete sense.
Yeah, and I think from the Sunrun perspective, it's all about the customer, right? And what the customer getting the best solution for them. So I don't think we're worried about selling fewer batteries, right? What we want to do is help the customer kind of find the right solution, which could include, the tapping into the EV, could include stationary batteries and some combination. But in the end, those are kind of the trade-offs that we can kind of help guide the customer through and help them, make decisions that are best for them. And that's, I think, a lot of the value that a company like Sunrun provides. This actually gets very complex, right? And most people, don't and honestly shouldn't have to put a lot of, really, really do a bunch of analysis and think through it. Like, that's our job. It's our job to make all this complexity, sort of simple and understandable. So that customers can kind of get the outcomes that they desire. And that's really the core of what we do at Sunrun. And what my team particularly works on from a product perspective is kind of boiling that complexity down to really clearly understandable outcomes for customers.
Yeah. So Carl, I'm curious, we're seeing more and more, solar plus storage systems, and even without storage, I guess every home business that has behind the meter power production in a lot of ways functions as a mini power plant. And now that we're seeing more and more, I know there's discussions around aggregating these power plants into what's known as a VPP or a virtual power plant. I'm curious if you could give us kind of the intro to exactly what's going on there, or for the layman. I'm super new to my understanding of this. So even for myself, I definitely want to know, I guess, what's going on and how you're involved.
Yeah, sure. So virtual power plants are a relatively new concept. They've been around. People have been trying to do it for a few years, more than a few years. But I would say it's really taken off in the last couple of years. And there's sort of a through line here, right? Where you can go back decades, even into the 1980s, where utilities would have these demand response programs. So if you think about what a demand response program looked like in, you know, 1988, right? You would sign up for a program with your utility. They would come out and put a remotely controlled switch on your air conditioner. You get some discount on your utility rate. And then, you know, when the grid was under stress, when it was really hot, well, you know, they'd use a pager network and they'd shut that thing off. So you don't have air conditioning anymore at all. Well, that's a pretty terrible experience, right? And it turned out, unsurprisingly, that, you know, those kind of programs were just not very popular with customers. The money that they would get paid for participating in that kind of thing was not super interesting. So you fast forward, you know, a bit, and you start to see people getting smarter about that. I think a great example of this was a Nest, right? The Nest thermostat made this kind of popular where, you know, instead of sending a signal to like just shut off your air conditioner entirely, there is like an integration with the utility, and the utility could, in again, exchange for some compensation or some utility bill reduction, you know, increase in the summer, increase your set point a little bit so that the, you know, your air conditioner didn't run quite as much. Right. And that would be a form of demand response. So that kind of thing has been going on for a while. But there's some limitations to it. And I think one of the challenges there is all those kind of programs that are touching, you know, things like thermostats or inside the home. You know, there's kind of a quality of service aspect of that. And a lot of people, or in other words, comfort, right? And a lot of people aren't necessarily super willing to like give the utility control over that, right? You see a lot of cases where people signed up for it and they forget. And then the next thing they know, they're uncomfortable on a heat wave. And it's like, they're blaming the utility. Right. So these DR programs, you know, they have, there's a lot to that, and there's a lot of value to it. Right. But like making sure that value is kind of like is allocated properly has always been a challenge. So I think one of the interesting things about virtual power plants is it's a bit of a different model where you have aggregators, companies like Sunrun, who have the relationship with the customer, and they're able to put together a portfolio of resources that the customer has agreed to put into these programs and is compensated for, and then effectively is able to dispatch them, you know, into some construct. It could be a demand response construct. It could be a market construct. There's a lot of different ways. There's a lot of different flavors of this. But the basic idea is that we're aggregating either, you know, flexible or responsive load, or in our case, primarily energy storage, batteries, right? And using that capacity in market. So for us, to date, we focused on batteries. The nice thing about batteries is you can dispatch somebody's battery. It doesn't generally have an impact on their quality of service, right? They don't even necessarily know, they don't even necessarily have any impact on them at all, right? Because we're just sort of pulling energy out of their battery when they're not otherwise using it. And then we can kind of recharge their battery so that, you know, whatever the situation is, like they always have enough energy to utilize it in the way they expect. And so managing that is complex, but again, like coming back to this theme of making sort of, you know, this complexity really simple for the customer, we're able to kind of essentially take thousands and thousands of individual residential batteries, and from the utility's point of view or from the grid operator's point of view, dispatch them as if they were one big battery or sort of one big power plant, right? So that's the idea. The idea is that you're able to like dispatch energy, schedule and power, behave like a much larger entity, like a much larger power plant, but it's actually an aggregation of thousands and thousands of small systems. And that's what a virtual power plant is.
Yeah, that's really cool, Carl. And unfortunately, you kind of triggered me into a scenario that my wife and I went through. We moved to California. We were renting it was a duplex. And I guess when we signed like the contract agreement to lease that home, we didn't completely read the fine print about the energy terms usage. And I guess where we were at that part of California, there was like basically the owner of the homes had agreed to some sort of contract with the energy company that if they use a specific amount of power during like the peak hours during the summer, that they were basically allowing the energy company to shut off their access to power. So in order to get like to you know, a decent budget cut on their bill.
Wow.
And so it just so happened that my wife was actually pregnant, and she was like in preterm labor for like 3 weeks, extremely dehydrated, and she was like extremely nauseous. So we were trying to keep her as cool and as hydrated as possible. And so it ended up getting like over, it was like 105 degrees one day, and just all of a sudden, just the power shuts off and there's nothing I can do. And it's just, so it was just one of those, you know, you talk about being an unpleasant experience. It was just, we basically had to like live in the hospital because it's the only place we could get cool. So
first wow, that's beyond an unpleasant experience. That's a dangerous experience.
Yeah. So I can assume that the virtual power plant agreements and plans that you have set up with your customers, that's probably not something you'd have to worry about. Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're definitely never cutting off service to anybody. That's
yeah.
But it's shocking, to be honest.
Yeah. One of the things beyond that, though, is just as a synopsis, you talk about it turning into basically one giant battery for basically everyone to use. Who's the main benefactor of that? Is it the utility company? Is it the group of homeowners? Like basically it becomes an energy HOA, or is it your company? Is it Sunrun, or is it a conglomerate mesh of all three?
Yeah, I mean, there's a, I guess, a cascade of value, right? So there's definitely value for everybody in the value chain, I guess you could say. Primarily, the way these programs are set up is there's a, you know, either a utility run program or a wholesale market program, where there are certain times of, you know, certain hours of the year, there's a lot of value to that energy. If you think about like what, you know, you think about at a macro level, right? Like how the utility grid operates, or how the power system operates. Forget about utilities, but how our power system operates. You have to size every component, every aspect of that system, from your wires, your transformers, your generation capacity, you know, to the highest moment of the year, right? You have to have the ability to serve load, no matter how high that gets for however many moments that occurs. So that once in 10 year event. So you think about it, like what that means is that you've overbuilt everything in the system massively, right? So you have a lot of kind of excess capacity. It also means that that last little slice of capacity that you need to serve those, you know, 10 hours a year, 100 hours a year, is typically very expensive to run, right? So the idea is that like there's this thing called a merit order. And in the merit order, the last things that get dispatched are the last most expensive things. So for that handful of hours a year, that power is very, very expensive. So the idea is that instead of spitting, and dirty, by the way, right? It's often your most least efficient, most polluting power plants get spun up at that time of year. And as an example of that, we did a program with the East Bay Community Energy, where they actually had, in Jack London Square, a oil-fired combustion turbine that's like sitting right next to Jack London Square. It's like basically in the middle of Oakland, right? Wow. In a community that is already impacted by a lot of air pollution because it's the port is there and the trucks and everything else, right? So it's a very dirty power plant that spins up, you know, handful of hours a year. I don't know the exact number. Working with East Bay Community Energy, we were actually able to create a virtual power plant that essentially allowed them to retire that very dirty and polluting piece of infrastructure. So there's, you know, there's public health implications of this, benefits. There are economic benefits, because obviously if the utility doesn't have to buy that expensive power, then in theory, like those savings should accrue to the entire, to all ratepayers. But they are obviously also saving money by not purchasing that power. And the people who are being dispatched as part of that VBP do get compensated as well. And then obviously because we're providing that service, we're, you know, running the whole program, all the technology behind it, we obviously get compensated for that as well. It has to make sense for us. But you know, that's essentially the value chain.
No, I love that it goes even beyond just to those directly involved, even to the point of public health. That's really cool.
Yeah. And I'll say, like, as a, from a societal perspective, right. In September of last year of 2022, we were able to dispatch about 18,000 batteries during time of peak demand. And that there was collectively about 340 megawatts. And that kind of a event, we actually were able to help the grid operator, CAISO, avoid rolling blackouts, which would have affected millions of Californians. So it's not just about the economics, it's also about reliability. And as we spoke, it's also about, you know, public health.
Hey, that's super cool. I know this isn't a video recording, but I kind of had my mouth hanging open when you said that. I did not expect you to say 340 megawatts. I can't really do the math off the top of my head, but maybe you can give me an estimate of how many individual nodes or how many homes that was in the network.
Yeah, that was about 18,000 individual batteries, individual households.
Wow, that's super cool, especially with the issues we've had in Texas the last few years, and CAISO's grid is always part of the discussion as well. So I know they'll take in cases where they need it, they will take every bit of energy they can get their hands on. So this is definitely a really exciting future in this tech.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot more to come. I mean, there's as we said, you know, that's at a relatively you know, modest attach rate of batteries to solar today. And I think, you know, moving forward, that's only going to increase. And so it's a huge opportunity for us, of course, but just for society, frankly. So it's one of the things I'm most excited about.
Yeah, absolutely. So that just to clarify, that network of virtual power plants currently, and correct me if I'm wrong, currently does include EVs or can include EVs, or is it just strictly traditional home battery backup at the moment? And if it does include EVs, what additional considerations or you know, technology challenges are there, if any?
Yeah, so that particular VPP was all batteries, all residential batteries, so it did not include EVs. You know, EVs can and have been included in demand response type programs in the past, not by Sunrun, but you know, they are what I would consider to be a flexible load, right? In the sense that you can, putting the bidirectional piece of it aside for a moment, you know, a typical EV charger is several kilowatts, right? I mean, it depends on the size of the charger and other things, but it's a sizable load. It can be, the power of an EV charger can be equivalent to like the power that the rest of the house requires. So we could double, you know, the power draw of a house at any given moment. And so being able to schedule when that occurs is actually rather important, right? You don't want that to be occurring during times of peak demand. A, it stresses the grid, and B, it's, you know, it's expensive for the customer. So just at a basic level, you know, scheduling EV charging at the appropriate times is super important. And that can be done, you know, kind of on an ongoing basis. It can also be done as part of a demand response event. And, you know, various players in the industry have absolutely demonstrated that. When you move into bidirectional, obviously you have the opportunity to not only just avoid that usage during, you know, the peak times, but actually able to dispatch back to the grid during those times. Again, that's a future state that I think we're all looking forward to. It's not something that really, you know, has been done today outside of relatively small pilots. But it is something we're very excited about and very interested in. It is more complex, right? Because unlike a stationary battery, you don't know whether, for, you know, if you think about a fleet of thousands of vehicles, right? Where are those vehicles? Right.
You go to call on the network and you only have, you know, 70% of the capacity you expected because people are out cruising around.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to kind of get a sense of, you know, where the vehicles are they available or not, how much energy is in them. Because again, it's not like a stationary battery where, you know, you have as much control over that. People are using it as a vehicle, so they're driving around. So they may need, and they may need, you know, to reserve more or less capacity for themselves for a trip they have planned, right? So it becomes a much bigger, more challenging optimization problem, would be fair to say. Yeah, huge potential.
Yeah, and I'm really excited, Carl, talking about the future and casting vision. What are some of the most exciting emerging technologies that you see surfacing into the market right now, or perhaps that are being spearheaded by your company?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm hesitating a little bit. No, I'm hesitating because I don't I would love to talk about some of that, but in terms of I got to keep some things under my hat.
No, that's totally understandable.
No, I mean, I think industry-wide, look, I think that there's some really interesting, well, I'll talk about Span as an example, right? So we have a partnership with Span. They have a smart main panel essentially. So what that means is it's a instead of your, you know, kind of basically the electric your electrical panel, main electrical panel hasn't changed in, you know, 100 years, right? It's just a it's a dumb thing. It's got a bunch of wires in it, bunch of circuit breakers that all they do, all these circuit breakers do is, you know, if there's a very important thing they do, which is that if you have a wiring fault or a current overdraw in your home, you know, they flip off. And then that's a situation where, you know, it always happens at the most inconvenient time. You know, you're out there in the rain with a flashlight, like trying to figure out which one of your breakers has slipped off. I'm sure we've all had that experience. So what's cool about the span panels, it actually puts monitoring and control on every one of those breakers and kind of brings all that into a really nice digital experience, really nice app. So that you can see, you know, how your home is using energy, and they surface that in the form of kind of insights to kind of tell you know, here's, you know, you're using temp energy at, you know, more expensive or less expensive times, and here's how much is coming from solar, and, you know, your battery is hooked in there, and so you kind of get this view of what's happening in your home. It also gives you control over, you know, individual circuits in your home, so you know, you could turn things on, turn things off as you need to or as you desire. But most importantly, I think that automation, by the way, it also enables electrification because it gives you by giving you control. In a lot of cases, you avoid the need to do like an electrical service upgrade. So if you think about if you were to put in like a, you know, high power EV charger, and you only have, you know, you maybe have a 100 amp panel or 125 amp panel, which probably means the wire that's coming into your house from the utility is like size similar to that, right? 100, 125 amps. If you're like me, a lot of people, you know, your service drop from the utility is actually underground, right? It's like $20,000 in 6 months to get that upgraded, best case, right? So like that's a big barrier to people adopting electric vehicles. It's a big barrier to people adopting, you know, replacing their gas furnace, replacing their gas water heater, replacing their gas stove, all these things that are in their house and polluting and causing climate, you know, climate trouble. So a product like Span Panel enables you to avoid that by controlling some of those loads, particularly in this case, EV charger, for example, such that, you know, the total load on that service doesn't exceed its rating, right? So that's all another huge benefit of that kind of technology. And then the third thing is when we pair it with battery backup, it gives us the opportunity as a customer, you can control kind of what's being backed up and what's not being backed up, and you can see how long your battery is expected to last given the amount of energy that you're drawing from the battery. So if you're, you know, you see yourself that the battery is kind of getting a bit low, and that will actually automate that and turn a bunch of things off that are like less important, right? And then you can go and say, no, but actually, I really did want that. I don't know. I want my lights in my kitchen. Right, I didn't necessarily think they were very important, but at this particular moment, I want those lights in my kitchen. So you can just slide that over, turn them back on, and power them up.
That's really
And
cool.
so it's super cool, yeah. So like that, those are the kind of, you know, product innovations that we're really excited to bring to our customers, and that's something that we've launched and are selling today. So yeah, there's a lot of innovation coming, right? Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I mean, doing something as simple, I was just trying to replace some bulbs in my basement. I was trying to figure out which circuit breaker I needed to shut off. And my house was built in 1940, so it's getting close to being like 100 years old. And I don't know when all these labels on my circuit board were put up, but I basically had to shut off almost every circuit breaker in my house to finally figure out which one it was. So just something as simple as being able to tell me exactly how my house is wired in a digital format, that's worth it to me. So love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another area to highlight is our partnership with Lunar. So Lunar is a a startup here in the Bay Area that's working on a really a couple of things actually. So one is a really innovative home battery. So we are actually Lunar's a JV between Sunrun and a large multinational Korean company that's big in the energy storage space. And we've been working very closely with them, with some of the top engineers and product folks in the industry to develop kind of a new home battery technology that has some really cool features that I can't talk about yet. But we're very excited to be working with them on that and starting to roll that out later on. I don't have a date for you, but yeah. That comes in. They also have a really very powerful VBP or grid services optimization platform that we're starting to utilize. So we're partnered closely with them. Their platform provides us with the ability to kind of optimize both batteries and other end use devices, other DERs as we call them, distributed energy resources, like EV chargers, like smart thermostats, et cetera, et cetera. And kind of co-optimize those things to most efficiently dispatch them into the market in a way that doesn't affect, the customer's comfort and quality of service, if you will. So I'm super excited to be partnering with them on that. We announced that a few weeks ago. So, and more to come, right? But we're definitely leaning forward and partnering with really, I think, best in class players in the space to bring bring these technologies to market. So it's super exciting.
Yeah, Carl, I think you've set me on a mission this afternoon to research the SPAN panel.
Great.
As a long time residential electrician, you guys by the way touched on a bunch of things that I could rant about for a very long time in the last few comments. I used to do service upgrades. So you're talking about long-term, waiting for service upgrades, but specifically on this panel, and we don't have to get too deep into this because like I said, I'm going to spend my afternoon researching this. Is this essentially just integrating circuit CTs and network connectivity so that you can trend your load and production on, via app and kind of be more connected? Or is there something more advanced happening here beyond kind of monitoring circuit load and production and then being able to visualize it?
Well, yeah, there is. I mean, I think fundamentally what you described is what the product does, but it's sort of a question of how you do that and how you create a really compelling customer experience around that. That is something that I think they've really nailed. It's also a very nice looking product. I mean,
it's beautiful.
yeah. So it's sort of what you described, but it's fully integrated, right? So unlike a product where you're kind of trying to put, CTs on every little wire,
right?
Right, like kind of a field installed solution that's a little bit.
I used to install those E-gauge devices, and
yeah, it's not that.
No, it's built. It's built in. I mean, it looks like a very elegant solution.
Yeah, and they're doing some really, I mean, there's some things I can't talk about, obviously, because it's between them and us, but they're doing some really interesting innovation that we're really excited to help bring to market. And again, as one example, that they have their own EV charger now. It's called SPAN Drive, which integrates with the SPAN panel, and that's an example of where they're able to use all that data, right, to operate that charger in a much more sort of nuanced, dynamic way. Rather than just turning it on and off, right? And that enables a whole suite of use cases that you can only do if you kind of have that level of highly granular monitoring and control over the entire system.
This is super cool. I kind of daydream of a day when all of this kind of comes together. And I'm sure you guys have installations or homes where they've kind of gone all in on this and you have every one of these components working together and starting to kind of figure out the integrations and the software needed to make, and you've touched on this a few times, to make this simple and easy so that the homeowner doesn't even know how many, connected and somewhat complicated devices are all kind of seamlessly working together. So I love what I'm hearing and can't wait to see this all be more normalized.
Yeah, definitely. We're working hard on that. Yeah, I think the other area that I'm really excited about and that Sunrun is, you know, committed to is around, as I mentioned, this kind of general theme of taking, you know, helping to take fossil fuels out of people's homes. I think folks maybe don't fully realize the impacts that that burning, you know, fossil gas, methane gas in your home actually has on your health, and even just having these kind of appliances in your home can impact your health, be dangerous, and of course is bad for the climate. So that's an area that I think we're super excited about, and it's really connected to solar and storage as well, because it enables you to kind of take these old appliances out of your home and replace them with highly efficient, super high tech, right, electrified versions. It's just better quality of life, right? It's a high performance home, and we can power that all with solar and storage. And that's a future that we're super excited to be working towards.
No, that's amazing, Carl. And one of the things I love to get to do is to bring things around full circle. At the beginning of this podcast, you talked about how you're basically the way you kind of got your passion ignited for this industry is getting to go visit these remote locations where you saw just a lot of areas that were energy poor, yet the abundance of those resources is there. It's just the actual conversion to energy is not. So as we look into the future, where do you see as the outlook for areas around the world that are still facing energy shortages and crises related to perhaps politics or warfare, worst case scenario? Like what does that future look like, and how do we bridge that gap? I know that's a big question.
That's a big question. Yeah, no, but look, I think fundamentally, right, what you touched on is absolutely, you know, the key to all of this, which is that, you know, the solar energy in particular, but also, you know, wind energy and other renewable energies are just so incredibly abundant. I think people don't necessarily fully appreciate like what it means to be able to tap into those resources. And it kind of gets us out of this, you know, it kind of gets us out of this scarcity mindset that folks have had around energy for a long time, right? It was all about, you know, efficiency, and it was all about, you know, hey, got to put on a sweater, you got to save energy. Like, you know, those things have their place, and certainly you want things to be efficient, right? You don't want to be wasting energy for no reason. But when you think about like what it means to have access to, you know, this sort of natural abundance of energy, it's transformational, right, for societies. It's going to be transformational for our society, and it's happening today. If you look at the growth of solar, the growth of wind, it's, you know, it's exponential, right? Not just distributed on homes, but just across the board. Now that comes with challenges, and those challenges, you know, come around managing energy because it's available. And that, you know, that of course, there's second order challenges to tapping into that abundance, which is, again, you know, kind of looping that back, that comes back to why virtual power plants and things like this are important, because traditionally in a power system, we've always had the mentality that, you know, we control generation and load is load. It's inflexible. It's, you know, it's kind of a given. And actually we're now actually transitioning to this paradigm where like generation is, you know, it's predictable, but it's stochastic. And so you really want to pair that. When I say there's stochastic, meaning that like it's you don't control when it turns on and off, right? It's like the sun, you know, the sun's going to rise and set every day, and you know the shape of that, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to be able to like you have to be able to have flexibility on the load side in order to take best advantage of it. And so I think we're going to see that dynamic play out, not just in the United States, but globally. And to your point, in terms of how this all circles back to kind of, you know, energy poverty and energy access, frankly, like as richer countries go through this process of decarbonizing and kind of switching over to more renewable resources. As just as we've seen in solar, that and battery storage, that scale up drives cost down. And again, it's exponential, right? Mm-hmm. So that cost down benefits everyone. So, you know, 25 or 30 cent a watt modules benefit everybody in the world, right? Whereas when I started my career, they were $4 a watt, maybe even $10 a watt in some cases.
Wow.
Think about that.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, I love that. I love that it's all what happens even in energy rich countries is actually having an impact, may not be immediate, but in the long term for everyone in the globe. Well, I want to thank you so much, Carl. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Are there any resources that you'd like to point our audience to learn more about Sunrun or more about any of these different products and technologies you've been referencing today?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would encourage everyone to go visit sunrun.com, our lovely website. I can't end this podcast without recommending that. And, you know, just I would just encourage everyone, you know, to look at getting, you know, whether it makes sense to get solar and storage for their own home. It's a really kind of liberating experience to be able to generate your own energy on your own home and take advantage of that. So definitely encourage everybody to look into that. I mean, that's probably the best place to start, to be honest.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll do my best to add some additional resources about Span Panel and Lunar and some other things we talked about in the notes for this episode as well.
Perfect. That sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Carl. And thanks to our audience for listening to this episode of the Raptor Report. We hope we've been able to provide you with some enlightening insights that have sparked your curiosity and increased your awareness of developments within the solar industry. Look out for new episodes on your favorite podcasting platform, where you'll get to have the chance to hear insights about solar from unique perspectives and leaders within the solar industry. Until then, this is Stephen Gloss and
Don Nista
signing off.